And welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Director Steven Soderbergh's new series, The Nick, premieres this weekend on Cinemax. It stars Clive Owen, playing the irascible medical maverick Dr. John W. Thackeray.
We now live in a time of endless possibility. More has been learned about the treatment of the human body in the last 5 years than was learned in the previous 500. 20 years ago, 39 was the number of years a man could expect from his life. Today, it is more than 47.
So, from that clip, a couple things are pretty obvious. One, Thackeray is that character we know and love so well in medical dramas, the brilliant blowhard. And two, if he's talking about an American life expectancy of 47 years, The Nick is not set in 2014. In fact, Soderbergh sets his series in the year 1900 at the Knickerbocker Hospital in New York, a facility whose mission was to care for the city's immigrants and poor. Well, that also happened to be the original mission of Boston's Brigham and Women's Hospital. Now, today, it's one of the world's premier healthcare and research hospitals. But back at the turn of the 20th century, it too sought to treat needy Bostonians. So we respectfully suggest that Soderbergh should have set his new show right here, because the real stories that a place like the Brigham have to tell are as fascinating as anything you'd see on TV. Take the story of Mary Agnes Turner, a woman who was admitted for the first ever surgery at the Brigham in 1913. Now, in Mary Agnes's story, you find the microcosm of the entire history of the art and science of surgery. The late Dr. Nicholas Tilney knew that history well. A few years ago, he came in to tell us more about what happened to Mary Agnes. She's featured in his book, Invasion of the Body, Revolutions in Surgery.
I'm a professor at Harvard Medical School, and was a surgeon at the Brigham and Women's Hospital for most of my career.
A transplant surgeon, in fact. He's also an avid historian. Now, the kind of major organ transplants Tilney used to perform were totally unimaginable in Mary Agnes's time. But that doesn't really matter, because Mary Agnes is unique.
She did something rather unusual at the time.
Which was January 22nd, 1913.
She went across the street to the new hospital.
Back then, it was called the Peter Bent Brigham Hospital, an institution dedicated to the care of sick persons in indigent circumstances in the county of Suffolk. Well, Mary Agnes had varicose veins, most likely caused by a lifetime of work as a maid in one of the great houses on Beacon Hill.
Trundling up and down stairs, carrying things, and having basically a fairly miserable existence.
Plus, she'd given birth to 5 children. So Mary Agnes ends up in terrible pain from the swollen, serpentine blue veins running down her legs. So she goes to the doctor.
So she seemed to me a little bit brave.
Brave? Well, why?
Because for the past century and a half, maybe, the poor particularly only went to hospital as a last-ditch measure of desperation, never expecting to come out.
But brave Mary Agnes, she went in.
The surgeon she consulted, David Cheever.
Well, Cheever's as blue-blooded as they get. A Harvard College grad, family full of doctors going way back to battle surgeons in the Revolution. And Dr. Cheever says, Mary Agnes, you need surgery. Now, since she'd spent so long as a domestic servant, maybe it just didn't occur to her to question the patrician dictates of a powerful male doctor.
I think that was very common until well into the 50s and 60s.
Which is the first hint about why Mary Agnes is so special. Her relationship with Dr. Cheever is unlike anything we have today. Now,
there's much more skepticism about doctors, about medicine, about opinions.
But not Mary Agnes. She says, yes, Dr. Cheever, and is admitted for the first ever surgery at the Brigham. And this was in 1913.
1913,
yeah. That she was admitted.
Yeah.
But get this. She's admitted 3 days before her surgery. 3 long, luxurious days before to get blood and urine tests, to get to know the staff. And then the big day comes. She's lifted out of her bed by a gentle giant of a man.
The orderly was a huge man called Adolf.
Adolf Watzka.
And Adolf didn't say anything, but he used to carry the patients in his arms to the operating room.
And he does this tenderly for Mary Agnes. He lays her down on the table and then steps back into the shadows. Everyone else in the operating room wears face masks, except Adolf.
Around the turn of the century, maybe a little bit before masks came in.
But they don't become mandatory in operating rooms until after World War I. So for Mary Agnes's operation, the chief surgeon, Harvey Cushing, doesn't make Adolf wear a mask.
And apparently Adolf said he never breathed.
He never breathed.
in the room.
Cushing somehow let him get away with it.
And the operating room itself, it was brand new.
The floors were polished wood.
The furniture was cast iron. A couple electric bulbs dangled over the operating table.
But most of the light came in through a big window in the outside wall.
This sounds totally primitive. I mean, could you actually imagine performing surgery like that?
No.
Then how'd they do it?
In our view, in our context now, it's incredibly primitive, but then it was really the top of the drawer.
We're talking state-of-the-art here, 1913 cutting edge. There are no surgical scrubs in Mary Agnes's operating room, no latex gloves, no autoclaved instruments, or red biohazard disposal bags.
Well, that's the way it was for a very long time, until well after World War II.
And in Mary Agnes's time, at the end of each case, a nurse was directed to gather up the blood-soaked sponges off the floor.
She collected the rubber gloves, she collected the gowns, she washed them all, or had somebody wash them all.
For later use?
In fact, when I was a college student, one of my volunteer jobs was to wash and powder rubber gloves for reuse. This was in the 50s.
Dr. Tilney, I have to say, that's really gross.
We didn't have all the disposable stuff. I'm sure cotton was expensive and all the stuff was expensive, and so they just used them over and over and over again, just wash and wash and wash.
Okay, so there's Mary Agnes Turner, lying on a cast iron operating table, covered with a thin blanket, and staring up at a newfangled electric light bulb, pouring her focus into that one small point of light, holding on because she's about to hand over her body, her soul, her consciousness to a bunch of men she hardly knows. I mean, Dr. Tilney, when you think about it, Mary Agnes has just got to be scared.
Well, it's total terror, to tell you the truth.
But is it really that bad? No. In fact, Mary Agnes is actually kind of lucky. She's having her varicose veins removed just after one of the most spectacular developments in modern surgery.
And this was a revelation.
Anesthesia.
Mrs. Turner indeed received anesthesia. Anesthesia, of course, came in 1847, the first successful one at the Massachusetts General Hospital with the use of open-drop ether.
But going under wasn't exactly a walk in the park.
Well, you felt as if you were suffocating.
So to stop her from fighting against the feeling, doctors have to hold Mary Agnes down as she loses consciousness. But if you think that's bad, consider what the alternatives were.
Throughout human history, surgery had been a torture chamber. I mean, it had been horrible.
How bad was it?
During the 16th and 17th century, to make things even worse, blood was controlled with red-hot cauteries and or boiling oil. So, I mean, you can imagine the absolute anguish.
And it doesn't get much better when you hear what the standard operating procedures were for, say, an amputation in the 18th century British Navy.
The patient was tied to a table. He was doped up, perhaps, with wine and laudanum. He was bled to make him weak. They got a drummer to drum a drumbeat into his ear just to keep his, presumably to keep his mind off of what was happening down below. It was absolutely horrible.
Dr. Tilney, it actually sounds beyond awful. But Mary Agnes, and I have to admit I'm getting really attached to her by now, she doesn't actually have to suffer like that, thank God. She gets anesthesia and loses consciousness. Her body goes limp, and the doctor is ready to make the first cut.
What he did was he used a new technique called internal stripping.
But let's hit pause here for a second and zoom in on that bright, flashing steel scalpel. It's got a magnificent story all its own, a kind of history within a history. The scalpel, it turns out, is 8,000 years old.
Humans used flint to knock open their skulls to relieve melancholy and epilepsy?
Yeah, that's right. If somebody was acting a little crazy, perhaps, they would, in fact, refine the skull, either cut a hole in it with a saw or just knock a hole in it with a flint.
And then we go from flint
to bronze,
the Romans,
to iron,
the Middle Ages,
and then to steel,
the American Civil War, lots of amputations. And then
the modern scalpels really came from Mr. Gillette of the razor blade company.
The best a man can get. He perfects the detachable, disposable safety razor. And by 1915, just after Mary Agnes has her surgery, the modern scalpel is perfected and its basic design has been in use ever since. Your finger still on that pause button? Well, hold it there a little longer, because the story of the scalpel tells us something else. It tells us that much of modern surgery as we know it today comes as the result of experiment or happenstance or war. The very fact that doctors even understood that Mary Agnes's varicose veins were caused by malfunctions in her circulatory system, even that kind of happened by accident. Because in the 17th century, an English physician named William Harvey, he had a patient, a young nobleman, who had a huge infected wound in his chest. And apologies out there to the squeamish amongst us.
So Harvey was able to stick his fingers in the hole and feel the heartbeat.
A warm, live human heart beating and pushing and pumping blood.
He also,
look at that.
Yeah. He also confirmed this in animals, and he also confirmed this in other dissections.
Et voila, the discovery of the vascular system. But as things often go with radical discoveries, Harvey's own fellow surgeons bellow most loudly against his discovery.
Surgeons are people who are very much take charge people. They're very sure of themselves. And I think, like most of us, they don't like change, even though it seems incredibly obvious.
But science finds a way. The knowledge, it sticks. And now we return to Mary Agnes Turner, the domestic servant with varicose veins, the first surgical patient at the Brigham Hospital in 1913. Surgeons strip the distended veins from her legs, they tie it off with catgut, suture up the wounds, and then wheel her to the wards where she enjoys a gentle 10-day post-operative recovery.
Probably not because she needed to be there, but that's just what they were. She was the first patient. They liked her. They took care of her. And she went home after 10 days completely healed. And it was a thoroughly satisfactory experience for her.
She had a good time.
Well, I think she didn't have a bad time.
And how much did it cost her?
Nothing.
Wow. Now, Mary Agnes's story has one last surprise for us. It's been more than 100 years since she checked into the Brigham, and since then,
there's been just a burgeoning of medicine, there's been a burgeoning of pharmacology, there's been a burgeoning of biological sciences, and there's been a burgeoning of surgery.
Surgery has, in fact, become so ambitious and so common that there are
85,000 elective cases done every weekday in this country.
And that's per day?
Per weekday.
Per weekday.
I mean, isn't that staggering?
It is. And this is where Dr. Tilney shakes his head in wonder and disbelief. He says no matter how ubiquitous or technological or routine surgery gets, there's something about it that does not change. It's this idea that to fix, we must cut. That in order to heal the body, we must invade it. And that remains as spectacular and audacious an act today as it was when Mary Agnes Turner first checked into the Brigham Hospital in 1913. Dr. Nicholas Tilney shared Mary Agnes's story with us back in 2011. Sadly, he died in 2013, but his passion for the history of medicine lives on in his book, Invasion of the Body, Revolutions in Surgery. Stick with us. There's more of the show in just about 90 seconds. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.